Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Welcome back, Cracked fans. We are live at the inaugural ATP 175 event here in Phoenix, and I am joined to my left by the current world number 188. It is a pleasure to be joined here by Emilio Nava. Emilio, I appreciate you taking the time to do this. My first question, because I know your brothers will ask, so I got to ask you first, how are they doing?
Pretty good. First of all, thanks for having me here. You know, I love a little podcast setup, talking to them, just having fun, and pretty good. Yeah, like you said, here in Phoenix. You said challenger, but it feels like an ATP. You know, This tournament's unbelievable. The course, the way they treat the players. I mean, I can't wait to get the week started.
Yeah, no, yeah. I love to hear that. And it was so weird for me because, first of all, for those that don't know, your older brother Eduardo, someone I've covered throughout the course of our time here at Cracked Rackets, I saw him as the volunteer assistant for Wake Forest. I was like, you're not coaching. I was like, because that means I'm really old and I don't like this at all. And so, again, I hope your family's doing well. But
Thank you.
I want to talk about you here now as well. You entered this week 188 in the world, and you know, that's right around your career high. Obviously, you were able to win your first challenger title last season. I'm curious, as you know, we're about 2 months into 2023, how would you assess your level, where your game's at right now?
I think it's going pretty well. You know, a bit of a rocky start of 2023, but you know, I'm doing better than I was last year, right? I'm healthy, I'm feeling good. You know, won some two matches here last 2 days, so that's been a big help. Played Indian Wells last week as well, and you know, just every match, every week, just try to play a little bit better. You know, be a little more positive, and I think that'll just at the end make you be a little more competitive in these matches.
Sure. Yeah. And you mentioned the qualifying victories you had. You were able to win two wins. I know it had been a while for you a little bit since you've been able to be in the winner's circle. You know, talk to me about what clicked in your game and what did it mean to you to get a couple victories here to start the week.
It meant a lot because I think I was on like a seven match loss.
You said it. It's true. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
So
seven
true.
Matches. So, you know, up a set, up a break, you start thinking, oh, you know, can I actually do this? Like, you know, I haven't been able to do it lately. You know, but can I? And I mean, you just focus in the moment. You know, where am I going to serve? When am I going to return? Just every second, and just hopefully competing and being positive is enough. And the last 2 days it was. So pretty happy about how I came out on top.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're now 21 years old and you've been a pro now 3-4 years. I'm curious for you at this stage of your career, do you feel like you have a better grasp on the routines of life on the pro tour? Has life been, does it get easier as you continue to progress?
I think it does get a little bit easier. You know, I think you get a little more used to it. You know, at the beginning I was just, you know, practice, go back to the hotel and just chill the whole day, you know?
Sure.
And I was like, you know, it's not as productive as I want to be, right? So now I try to look for like, you know, there's a really good library here. Yeah. There's also the art museum as well, so you know, just trying to get around, you know, looking at different parts of the city, you know, getting a little more culturalized. If that's the word, I think. Mm-hmm. And then,
culture, same thing.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
And then, just trying to just disconnect a little bit off the court when you're not playing, and just let your mind just be a little more relaxed.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating for me to hear because you're a guy who obviously elected to forego the college tennis route. You're also someone who I feel like has done a lot of international playing. And by that sense, I mean, obviously, you're an American. You could be here in America playing challengers with your rankings.
Yeah.
Could have been playing American-based futures. And you did that some, but you took more of a, you know, European or, dare I say, global focus to your schedule. I'm curious why that was the choice you made.
Yeah, I think I made that choice because I'm based in Spain.
Sure.
At Juan Carlos Ferrero Academy. So, you know, we got a really good team out there, and I think it's just been, you know, easier for the travel, you know, play a couple challengers over there. Obviously, still come to the States because born and raised here, so no place like home. And, you know, these big, these little bigger tournaments, I'll always come to the States. You know, I'm never like, oh, you know, I'd rather stay in Europe than go to the States. You know, I'd never think like that. Yeah. And, you know, Uber Eats, Chipotle, so <it's> none better, right? Yeah. But yeah, so I think just the travel and the expenses, you know, it's a little cheaper just to stay in Europe since I'm training there. So,
yeah. No, I mean, obviously it's worked for your game, and, you know, I'm not sure if you've been interviewed about it since. I know it's been about a year, but for you to be able to capture your first challenger title last season, what did that mean to you? And to just be a top 200 player entering your age 21 year, you know, what do those things mean to you? How do you hope to build on them this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty massive last year winning my first challenger, because the year before I won my first future, mm-hmm. and then I won my challenger. Hopefully this year I can win an ATP. Right?
Yeah.
That's the dream, right? For sure. But it was big. I think I was like 205 mm-hmm. going into a US Open, and then I ended up winning my first round there, and I broke 200, and I was super stoked about that. You know, I was like, if every week I can just win a match or two, you know, and just make my ranking slowly climb up at the end, you know, you'll eventually get there as long as you're competing and just playing day in, day out. So mm-hmm. hopefully keep it rocking.
And I want to ask about your tennis. I promise we're going to get done with the boring stuff in a second here. But, you know, again, as we look at where you're at in the rankings, I always say affectionately, 180, great place to be. Kind of the vomit zone, because you're like, do I go play challengers? Do I go play ATP qualies? And right now, I guess we're on camera, so some viewers may be able to see you shaking your head in agreement. But to the podcast listeners who don't see that, you are shaking your head in agreement. Is that the most difficult choice, and how do you go about making it?
Yeah, it's tough. I was actually talking about it with my coach yesterday. We were like, you know, I mean, what do we do? Do we play? You know, do we take a little, I guess, safer route playing challengers and getting the main draws and trying to get some more points in or matches in? Or do we, you know, go test our luck in a couple ATPs? And it's a tough decision, but like I told yesterday, you know, it's a good problem to have, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd rather be 180 and trying to figure this out than, I mean, trying to see if I can get into challengers or that stuff. So I think it's trying to look at the positive way, and just it's a good problem to have. And, I mean, hopefully I can win a couple matches here and that problem will get a little less. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how it goes the next couple of months.
Well, to that end, obviously here in Phoenix, round number one, and it's raining right now, so your match has been delayed, but you're supposed to face Richard Gasquet in round number one. Now, you're even younger than I am, which makes me sad, but obviously that means your lifetime, you know, in tennis has been watching Richard Gasquet on TV. You've certainly seen him matches. You know what to expect with the one-handed backhand.
For sure.
What do you look forward to most about that challenge?
Honestly, I just hope he plays a pretty good match. No, just to see where my level's at, you know. Okay. And I know that backhand, it's been a pretty big weapon his whole career. And I mean, I have grown up seeing him on TV, so that also doesn't really make me as nervous as I thought it would. You know, I'm pretty calm. I'm pretty focused on my side of the net. I know he's gonna play great, and hopefully we can just have a sick match and just battle it out.
Yeah. Well, let's get to your side of the net then. Now we can talk a little bit about tennis. I don't think anyone, or I think everyone who watches you play, you know, no one can accuse you of hitting the ball softly. That's not an issue for Emilio Nava. He's going to go full swing, you know, Mach 5 at all times. Right. And I'm curious, you know, how do you... Because I always say, there are times when I'll be watching you or anyone and you hit a forehand, I'm like, I would just like to do that once. How do you find that balance of, again, knowing you have those weapons and reining it in? Because I'm sure that's been the challenge.
No, it definitely has. You know, there's moments where it's like, I don't know, important point, and I ended up going for a pretty big shot and ended up missing it. After the match, my coach goes like, yo, why don't you just like spin it in claws? You know, just make it in, play it out. And I go like, I don't know, I wouldn't respect myself at night if I just pushed it in like that, you know? So I think that's been a good balancing point, you know, trying to figure out when to do this, when to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think I'll always be that, you know, fire in my belly type of guy where I'm just gonna rip it when I have it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But sure. Hopefully the when it does work, it works a little bit more.
The pendulum swinging your way. And I just want listeners or viewers to know, I can see in your eyes, you're like, they lights up when you're like, yeah, if I get a forehand, it's time to go
I'm
after
going
the
for
forehand.
It, yeah. That might work.
Again, respect, my friend. Yeah. Like, I just wish I could do that once. And you know, again, with a match like Gasquet on the horizon, playing challenger levels now the way you do, and so many of those challenger guys we see immediately go straight from the challenger level to the pro tour, what do you think is your best weapon right now in terms of how you go about finding success match in, match out on the court?
Like during the point and like forehand backhand?
All the above,
for sure. I mean, I think this preseason we worked a lot on my serve.
Okay.
Right, making it a little bit more consistent at higher speeds. Right, so I think that's being a pretty big part in tennis, especially now, especially in men's tennis, where, you know, if you get broken, it's pretty tough to come back. So we've been really focusing on trying to get high percentage and adding some miles an hour to the serve. So I think I'm doing a pretty good job of that and just trying to make it a little more consistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the same token, is that the shot you're looking to work at most?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just as I have all my confidence in my serve, you know, I also still want to keep trying to improve it. But of course, you know, my slice needs to work. My backhand needs to work. My volleys need work.
I mean, honestly,
my forehand needs work as well. So, I mean, mostly all of it needs work.
Sure.
But there's definitely days where, you know, it all clicks and you're all feeling great and you feel like, oh, you know, they can hit to my backhand. I'm going to make every shot. But that's a couple days out of the year. So mm-hmm. you just try to work on everything day in, day out, and just try to fine tune it.
It's interesting. When I was watching tennis when I was younger, and like, I'll just bring up the name, whatever. From 16 to 19 for me, you'd watch a guy like Stefan Kozlov, and you were just so compelled because at 12 years old, he was as good as he is now. And it was just like the feel, the touch, all these different things. It was really compelling to watch. The thing is, the more pro tennis I watch, the more I feel like you have to have a weapon. You have to have a way to make life easy for yourself. Have you found yourself feeling similar throughout these first 3 years?
Most definitely. I mean, the transition from the juniors into the pros,
yeah.
Right? I was going from playing kids my age, 18, 17 years old, to now I'm playing first round of qualies, a guy that's like 26.
Yeah, sure.
Right? And like can hit a pretty big shot. And I was like, well, the only way I can win this match is if I hit winners, you know, because yeah. I'm not going to just put the ball in, cross, you know, he's going to rip it down the line. So, and I think I have pretty nice game style for that, you know, because I can also rip it whenever I can inject that pace. So I'm kind of happy my mom, you know, gave me that forehand. So
yeah, just, good. That's where the credit goes to. Well, again, just last few questions because I know you got to go. Looking at this Phoenix event, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. Talk to me about how this event differs than some of the others, because I'm here on the grounds and I'm like, oh my God, where are we?
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. The scheduling's pretty good too, because it's the second week of Indian Wells before Miami. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the players that don't make it as well in the second week of Indian Wells can come here and play. And I mean, just look at the draw, you know, you have Berrettini, Schwartzman got taken out yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, by Borges. So, I mean, it's super competitive out here. And I'm lucky enough to get into the main draw. So hopefully I can make some noise.
That's what I love to hear. Well, last question. You talk about competition. Eduardo, Emilio, Diego. We need a fourth in the mix, too. Ernesto's your cousin, right?
Ernesto's
the fourth, then. That'll be the fourth.
Yeah.
Four of you go on the court. Who walks away standing?
Yeah, I think it'll probably be Eduardo.
Yeah.
Eduardo's an absolute menace.
Yeah.
Eduardo's a dog. You know, he got that college side of him, so he won't let anything pass him. And I'll give him a run for his money, but I think there'll be some pretty good matches in there for sure.
Were you watching? Because weren't Emilio and Diego like a match away from playing last year in the NCAAs? I want to say they were.
They were.
Right?
They were. Eduardo won first round.
Yeah.
And then he played the guy that beat Diego.
Right. That's what it was. It's if he would have won, they would have.
I remember when the draw came out and I saw them. They're gonna play second round and I was like, no, I didn't want to play second round. Like the finals maybe, but the second round no. But then Diego unfortunately lost. But I mean, his dream was to play the NCAA. So I mean, he was super stoked about that. And mm-hmm. I watched his match and he was super cool about that. And he had a really good last college semester playing mm-hmm. tennis in Xavier. So shout out to him. And he really got work done there. And Eduardo, I mean, guy's a legend.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. And, you know, I guess this will be my last question. What does it mean to come from a tennis playing family, to have that as like a unifying thing amongst the Navas? What does that mean to you all?
Yeah, well, my dad actually ran track and field, right?
Okay,
he ran the 400 meter and 100 meter. So he kind of taught us, I guess, how to be athletes, mm-hmm. right? You know, we started off running track and field, you know, long jump, sprints, 400 meters, 100 meters. And I could never beat Diego. Diego was the fastest one. But then once we kind of established that, you know, we started playing a little more tennis.
Sure.
And, you know, my dad kind of worked us into playing tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom started coaching us. And, you know, it's been really competitive at home. between the three of us, and I think it's really good being a tennis family. You know, I think we have a bit of trouble disconnecting from being the family to the tennis family.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
That middle ground, that balance. But I think we're still figuring it out, and we're still trying to get it together.
See, I expect you to say, "Yeah, Diego used to always beat me, and then I turned 12, and then you're like, and then I never lost again." Coming from a three brother family though, as well, I know obviously what it means to have siblings who can help push you in your sport. I also can say I'm the middle, and I know the youngest is always the most talented because they have it the easiest, and that's what we have here, obviously, in the Nava family. But no, Emilio Nava, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. Obviously,
for sure.
Wishing you luck, not just this week, but throughout the rest of your 2023 season, and always a spot for you on our show.
Thank you so much. Pleasure being here.
Yeah, of course. Sure. Pleasure to have you, my friend.